Welcome to Stockhouse.com's Fireside Chat, where you get the lowdown on the sectors, the companies, and the trends shaping your investment dollar.
TransEastern Power Trust is an open-ended, limited-purpose trust focused on the portfolio of operating renewable energy assets meant to provide a stable source of income for investors through consistent dividends. Instead of focusing on the extremely competitive North American markets, where valuations are high, TransEastern is concentrating on the European Union's periphery members, more specifically Romania, where there is a scarcity of competition and much lower multiples, about half the price of assets you would find in Canada and the United States. It's for this reason that I sat down with Chairman Ravi Sood and CEO Jay Coulter Eady to find out just exactly what's going on with TransEastern and what their prospects were and where they were heading. You started in 2014 with three small run-of-river hydro projects, and at the end of July added to that portfolio with a solar power asset acquisition. How has this acquisition impacted TransEastern?
Course of the year, we can now say that we're a sustainable business, and we can cover all of our obligations, which we couldn't quite say before. It was still a concept, even though we had three operating facilities. So that's by far the biggest milestone, and maybe even really the only one of substance over the past year. The other thing I'll say is it proved is when we went public, we said in the first year we'll do one deal, which will be another acquisition. It may be in hydro, maybe it's solar, but it will be in renewables. It will be in Romania again, because that's where we're seeing the best deals, and it will have a huge impact on our cash flow and be highly accretive to the trust. So we did it. So we delivered on that promise to investors, and I think notwithstanding the fact that we haven't been liquid, because we made the distribution, because we delivered on the acquisition, people are satisfied that we did as advertised. And I think it goes a long way to proving a point on two fronts. Number one, to Canadian capital markets or any investors looking at us, we weren't a one-hit wonder sourcing a few hydro deals. We've now done it again and done it on a much larger scale and are ready to do it again several more times. So we've got several more deals lined up. And number two, and not insignificant from this perspective of potential sellers of projects, we closed a much bigger deal. So it's fair to say in the renewables market in Europe, in particular in Romania, then we can be considered a closer. So we're taken very seriously. I think we could have we talked a good game between us before, but things you're viewed a lot differently when you actually come up with the money and pay people and actually close on some deals. So that's now happened, and that means I think it should give anyone confidence, whether they're a vendor or a potential investor in our company, that, yeah, this is, if we say we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And it might be challenging to get it done, but if we take it on, we're going to do it, and you can take that to the bank. So that's a huge positive for us as well. And that will continue. I mean, we've got another deal lined up that we hope to close before the end of 2015, and that will be more of the same. Accretive, even bigger transaction, and another major contribution to the trust, and again, showing that we're closers.
How would you describe your level of involvement with the projects that you currently have in your portfolio?
These are ultra low touch. So, we talk about our hydro assets as being low touch, but they do, we do have a technical team. We do have direct touch on it. It consumes some management energy and time, not much. We have a lot of room to expand there while keeping the same team, but the solar is even less. So we've got outsourced, it's called an O&M contract, operations and maintenance. So we did this acquisition six times the size of our business, and not one new person on headcount, nothing. So it's a perfect kind of asset for this strategy. So you don't have big people issues, HR integration. It's really making sure that you have your cost of capital low enough, you can service your debt, and that you can continue to access capital markets. So big focus on us now that we have some budget and the time and energy to focus on the capital markets aspect. That's really going to be the critical success factor for us. Like if our stock is trading down 50% and is hopelessly illiquid. We just can't get any more deals done. We're just sort of frozen. And if it's liquid and it's trading flat and up a bit, you know, look out, we'll be doing deals like crazy.
Would you say the share base is tightly held?
It's extremely tightly held. So pro forma this deal, we now have three shareholders who have about 75% of the company. So a Romanian fund, which is something like 35%, 28. Individual, which was there, incidentally, they were over 60% prior to the deal. So they've been diluted to something a little bit more manageable. That was a very odd thing for people to digest previously. Romanian fund has a 60% shareholding. A second shareholder, and this is a big positive as well, is the vendor on the solar assets that we just acquired took over half of his consideration in stock. So while he sold, he's still in, and he's still in a big way. So he's our largest individual shareholder now. He's over 30%. And then Sprott, which was the lead equity investor on the deal, and that's Rick Rule's fund out of California. It's not out of Toronto. Is I believe they're just over 9%. So those three put together are about 75% of the company. And then I also own about 10%. So then you're talking at 85, and you're talking a very narrow float, obviously, after that. One IA probably has about 5% of the remainder as well. So it's extremely tightly held.
Just who is your core investor audience? What is the demographic you're trying to reach?
Pre-retirement or at retirement age, medium net worth or high net worth investors, whether through IAs or directly. And I mean, I was very successful at accessing that demographic through BNN, and I basically spent no money on marketing historically. That was a huge channel for me. It worked really well. But that's our demographic. It's probably not the guys it's not the guy looking for 10x from junior mining. It's the guy saying, well, I own a bunch of Algonquin Power, Northland Power, and now they yield 5%. And they've gone up a lot, so I'll sell a little bit of those, and I'll add some of this to my portfolio to increase the total yield a little bit, and add a little bit of juice because it's got a little bit more potential for capital appreciation from this point. It hasn't gone up the way those ones have, or everything else has in the sector. So I would say, yeah, that's exactly it. That's sort of the 50 to 65 would be our target, or maybe just below that 50 level.
And who are the key players on your executive and your board? And what skills do they bring to the table to help push your company forward to achieve its goals?
Well, we got our chief executive, Coulter's, on the line. Coulter's based in Bucharest. He's Canadian, but he's there. He's immersed in the European renewables market, Romania in particular, and he's been living there now for 2+ years. So we've got, and that's part of our philosophy, is you got to be right in and on these things. If you're flying in and out, you can have lots of great meetings and big boozy dinners, but you don't really have, you're just not in the flow. So Coulter's there, and we've just got, deal flow is not an issue for us. If I were to be Coulter's agent for a minute, I mean, he's just fantastic at building the relationships and seeing these deals through, getting them structured and seeing them through to close through some pretty tricky situations. We've got on our board, we've got one notable. He's not part of the executive team, but he's a actively contributing director, which is John Huxley. John was the founder and longtime president of Algonquin Power, which I believe is the largest hydro operator in Canada. If it's not, it's very close to it. So generally been a very big success story for investors. So he's retired from there in 2006, now acts as a corporate director, but he's only on a couple boards, so he's selective about it. So great to have John on board, great sounding board, and I think a big shot of credibility for us to have somebody like that on our board of directors. Also on our team, now we're getting off the front line here, but behind Mike and Coulter is Jamie Croton. Jamie is an M&A professional. For 6 years, he was the power banker at RBC's M&A group. So focused on the power sector, 6 years of M&A transactions. So he worked on a huge percentage of the largest transactions in Canada and several in the United States. Really couldn't have anybody better or more experienced in helping us model and structure these transactions. So that's the core team between Coulter, Mike, myself, and Jamie. And then that's it. I mean, we just don't, there is no, there's the team in Romania from the operations perspective and finance, but that's it. And for the foreseeable future, that so it shall remain. We really don't need lots of people for this business.
What are the milestones investors can look forward to in the next 12 months?
Continued distribution, so it's not really a mile, it's more status quo. We should highlight a few weeks ago, we announced another deal, which is the acquisition of a junior company called Mediterranean Resources. A little bit confusing, perhaps. Mediterranean was a mining company. They had a gold asset in Turkey. They sold it, and they were just sitting on cash, no other business, no other concessions, licenses, assets. Just about $4 million of cash and a milestone payment due to them on first production at the property they sold of $2 million. So we've done a deal to acquire them for shares. And why would they do that? Well, they're trading at a third of cash value and had some disagreements among shareholders and the board on strategy to go forward. And we had a good relationship with some of those shareholders. So we said, look, why not merge it into TransEastern? It's a nice boost to our balance sheet, another $4 million for us, maybe six, when that milestone payment comes in, which would be probably end 2016 or 2017. So very good for us, and also a nice way for you to realize at least the cash value, which is really all you have in the company, and not waste any more on operating expenses being an orphaned listed entity. So we announced that deal, I think about three weeks ago. It's expected to close around September 15th. So that is another milestone, not insignificant, because it does boost our market cap from about $24.5 million to about $29 million, or $28.5 million, $29 million. We go from having just an extremely narrow shareholder base to it's only 20% dilution, but Mediterranean has about 1,000 shareholders. So I'm not saying it's going to add much to liquidity, but it does add to our distribution. That will help. So that's just increase awareness and increase the footprint of our shareholding. A lot of those shareholders, over half, are in the UK, so which is also a good thing for us with the European-focused strategy. We think that we'll retain a lot of them because they're still going to be down huge from their cost base. And, you know, gold stocks, you're familiar with what's transpired there over the last several years. You can imagine, even though our bid price was three times their stock price at the time of the bid, people are still down 95%. So we don't expect a huge amount of selling to come out of it, and they're getting a yield. So they can hopefully with some marketing to that shareholder base, just keep them in. But you know, if we see some turnover, great. Obviously, we need some stock moving. And if you get buyers, you do need some sellers. So it's a good thing. So that's another milestone in the immediate term. So the first thing is closing Mediterranean. Number two is another acquisition in the same vein, sort of similar scale as the solar, before the end of 2015, which will mean bigger market cap, widened distribution of the stock, more liquidity, and an even more sustainable yield. And then in 2016, our target is to do, without getting specific, but I mean, it's that much larger transaction, is doing a much larger deal. So just take us to the next level and get us into the quantum that we appeal to the larger dividend and income fund. So we do another deal, sort of the scale of the solar, maybe $25 million, so our market cap goes from just under 30 to sort of 50 to 50 plus, still way too small for the multi-billion-dollar dividend income funds, which are the primary shareholders of these peers that I talked about, the Algonquins and the Northland Powers and so forth. So we're missing a zero, basically. to get into that league. So we're still focused on small cap and a lot of IAs and high net worth. But 2016 is investors should look to the deal where we make that vault of forward of adding the zero in terms of the size of the business.
And I think too also Ravi is the diversification of generation type as well. I think right now we're sitting
good
with
point.
Hydro and solar, and I think that we'll go after a wind asset just so we have a diversified across geography, diversified across generation type, and diversified across wind, water, and solar.
Why is now the time for investors to jump on board? Why should we be excited about putting TransEastern into our portfolio?
Now is the time because we've got, it's a very different proposition than it was a year ago. You had to make the leap of faith that we would be able to do more of the same, that we weren't going to be trapped being just three small hydro projects in Romania. Now we've massively de-risked it, one, by showing that we could do another deal, and two, just the change in the financial complexion of the company, literally a 6x in terms of cash flow. So that's totally de-risked it, and you're buying it at the same price. So now you've got a lot more comfort in the yield. You can bank on that yield. You're going to get it. And from there, you can believe in management to whatever extent we can convince you that we'll continue to do deals like this, and that will ultimately lead to further sustainability of the dividends, but also capital appreciation if we can keep doing accretive deals. But even if we can't, we're now at least in a position that we can say, well, we can just keep delivering this distribution, this yield. And so you can take some comfort in that it's a reasonably low-risk investment.
What are the major challenges that you guys are going to be facing in achieving your goals? What is going to keep you awake at night?
Well, I'll put my two cents in, and then I'll ask Coulter to add to that. But the critical success, number one critical success factor for us is the cost of capital and access to capital. So getting the capital markets aspect right, and because as I'd mentioned earlier, if our stock's at 50 cents and not trading and nobody cares about us, we can't access any further capital, so we're orphaned and we're stuck. We can't do any more deals. And we've got a nice little portfolio, but that's all we'll ever be. We'll sort of be in a position where we probably have to actually sell the company. If we get it right, then it's a deal parade, and it's sort of the proverbial virtuous circle. So that is a critical success factor for us. Again, remembering that we don't really have any HR. We have very little. These are very low-touch assets. The bad news is there isn't huge upside on them. There's not, we can't go in and say we're going to add value and do things differently than previous management. But then the positive is, well, there's not much risk that we're going to screw it up or it's going to be materially different. It's just going to be what it is. and that's what we're advertising here. But I'd say by far the critical success factor for us and the key concern is getting the capital market strategy right, making sure we've got the liquidity and the access to capital. Coulter, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, no, I think, in terms of our business plan, I think that is really our key risk factor is to be able to grow the business and to achieve our goals on the public market side. I mean, in terms of operating the assets, quality, I mean, operations is not rocket science. Our O&M group is the largest private O&M group in Europe, so they know what they're doing. So, I think it's really getting the public market strategy right. We feel confident in the quality of the assets and the quality of the management.
Just what is TransEastern's end game?
We want to get large and liquid. So if we're advertising that we're going to be part of the stable part of your portfolio and the low risk part, we can't be illiquid and small market cap. We need to be bigger and we need to give you liquidity in and out. And so that's a major commitment to us. Now we've been extremely budget constrained for the last year. Every penny counts, and so we've not even launched a website. So we're doing that this weekend, just getting an initial website up. I've now engaged with you, have an external IR firm, and have engaged with the brokerage community and we'll be now actively marketing. Again, from their perspective, the brokerage community, we're now looking more like closers and doing deals that are big enough to involve lots of fees. So people are taking us seriously. Like, we got an inbound from CIBC a few weeks ago from their banking team, which was not going to be the case. I mean, we're still only a $25 million market cap company, but even the banks now, if you say you're closing a $46 million deal, that's worth some attention, at least put ourselves on the radar for them. So that's really a huge focus for us now. So we're going to be pursuing every option. BNN, which was a very regular guest and co-host on BNN over the years past, we'll be focused on pushing ourselves through that channel, through yourselves, and through really more of a focus on direct marketing to IAs and high net worth for the next several quarters while we're still so small, and just sort of introducing ourselves to the institutional world, and then as we get bigger and on larger deals, move to more of an institutional focus.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you guys taking the time.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.